Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. My name is Ibrahim Sani. So as we reach the festive season, one wonders what we are doing online and how we are spending it. Are we spending it safely, for instance? Are we going to be putting ourselves at risk when we go out for shopping for some of our goods and presents for our loved ones? Are we doing transactions safely online as well? Because, you know, it's the year end. You're going to be transferring funds left and right. But this is just the retail conversation. There's also the corporate conversation, because corporates behave just like humans, just like you and me. We too are going to be spending a lot of times and a lot of transactions online. The question now is whether or not fraud and security is going to be the big topic of the day. Joining us on the line all the way from Singapore is Gerald McDonald, SAS Regional Solutions Director for Fraud and Security. So, Gerald, where are you joining us from?
Calling you from Singapore.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this whole idea of whether or not fraud and security is a big topic to be discussed because of the festive season. Do you see a rise in cyber attacks during the festive season?
Most definitely, yes. It's boom time for retail during the holiday season, and we get these amazing events, these sales events like Chinese Alibaba's, China's Alibaba's 11/11, which they brought out in 2009. And it's the largest single shopping day ever, with a staggering $38.4 billion worth of trade back in 2019. And it's even higher now. And then we have Black Friday, which is a global buying craze, but Asia considers it to be one of the best bargaining opportunities of the year. So they go crazy at this time. And digital commerce in general has risen exponentially since the pandemic. We've seen that whole world of unbanked population finally being pushed into the banking world because they had no choice during the pandemic. They couldn't use the traditional methods and they had to move into the digital world, which was great for banks in one way because they finally tapped into that unbanked population that they've been trying to get into, which is very high in ASEAN particularly. But of course, they were also a relatively new and clueless banking population, if I could say. And so they were more vulnerable to scams, and they still are more vulnerable than perhaps the more experienced bankers. And if that wasn't enough, of course, we have rampant inflation because of all the economic challenges that are going on, the global challenges right now. And that's making people hunt for bargains even more than they've ever done before. So we have this rise in trade and we have a rise in vulnerability at the same time. If that wasn't enough, also, we've got the holiday season, as you mentioned earlier on, where people want to buy a specific item to be delivered by a specific date. And of course, they're thinking of other people, so they don't compromise on quality, perhaps. They want a very specific thing. And that creates this, or increases this level of desperation, which makes people even more vulnerable. And what I mean by that is they may be using traditional websites to buy online in the past. And if they're out of stock or they can't deliver in time, they start searching anywhere and anything that advertises the product they're looking for with the right delivery dates, they'll jump on it and try and make a purchase. And of course, some of those could be fake websites where they're stealing credentials. Unfortunately, Malaysians lost more than 1.6 billion ringgits through online scams between 2019 and 2021. And I'm afraid it's just got worse in 2022. There are talks about the numbers even doubling in this short window of time. So it's rising on an exponential scale right now.
Compared against our peers, is Malaysia faring worse right now against our peers, or are we doing better?
I wouldn't particularly say that Malaysia's worse than any of the others. And let's focus on ASEAN countries even. I wouldn't say it's the worst, but it's up there. It had the same size percentage of unbanked population that, say, Thailand and Indonesia and the Philippines had, less so in Singapore, because it's such a small population. So the numbers are very, very similar, actually, across the rest of the region. I wouldn't say Malaysia's particularly worse off than anybody else.
So who's the most debt prone? Is it the traditional, you know, grandma and grandpa who's not so much of a tech literate, or is it like these big corporations who might not necessarily have an eye or have an eye on the ball on all the transactions? Who's at risk, I suppose, that is when it comes to fraud and security?
Right, good point. So let's break that down into two questions. Who are the organizations and what's the profile of the person? As far as organizations are concerned, it's retail banks during the holiday season who are the most impacted, in my view. And they, of course, hold accounts for ordinary people like you and me. So the vulnerabilities there are from both the account holders and the banks. And the kind of account holders who are more vulnerable to scams particularly, let's raise that, it is the scams that are the biggest problem right now. It is that newly banked population of, yes, could be elderly, it could also be extremely young, and really anyone who is not used to this digital world and cannot comprehend the speed in which a fraudulent attack can occur, where accounts can be drained or money can be stolen. It's just beyond their wildest comprehension. Plus, they don't quite get the importance of keeping your user ID and password and things secret. They need quite often help to use these newfangled systems they've never seen before. And they reach out to the most bizarre people for help. And when they say, well, could you give us your user ID and password and we'll just do it for you? Oh, great. They think it's a service. So even when somebody in the guise of a bank calls up and says, we think you've got some suspicious activity on your account. Somebody might be stealing money from your account. It will put them in a state of fear, especially when they're in this heightened emotional state because of the instability that's going on right now. And if they say, well, tell you what, just give me your user ID and password and I'll test it for you, make sure it's all okay. And they go, okay, and they will give all their information. They'll test it and go, yes, no, your account's fine, don't worry. They'll put the phone down thinking, what a great service from the bank. And I know people who've gone through this. And then sure, you know, they look on their account the next day and it's empty and they can't understand why. So it is, yeah, I'm afraid it's the elderly, it could be the young in some cases, but certainly the newly banked population, in my view, that are most vulnerable for this. And the two types of, or the main types of attacks that happen are things like scams that I mentioned before, you know, the phishing scams, the love scams, I'm afraid, Macau scam, where people call you up pretending to be from the government and that you owe some money, a fine or something, make this payment right now and you'll be safe. So sometimes they will phish their credentials so that they can take over their accounts, and that's called third-party account takeover. Or they're fooled into making voluntary payments themselves, which is really what's called authorized push payments. So third-party account takeover, authorized push payments, two biggest areas that you mentioned there. But here's the challenge. You mentioned earlier on cybercrime, and people think, okay, this is cybercrime that's going on. And yes, technically, you know, cybercrime is a very broad title that could include these attacks. But I personally feel that's a little bit misleading because it gives people the impression that it's some kind of rocket science computer to computer. You know, space age computers here overtaking ones here. And so people can't do anything about it. It's beyond their ability to stop in some way. But actually, these scam attacks are very human. And there's a lot of human touch. It is human beings who are quite often calling you up to convince you to make these payments or frighten you into making them and stuff. So, and it is a human intensive industry. There are scam centers around the world, particularly in the ASEAN region, in places like the special economic zones between Laos and China and Myanmar and China and even in Cambodia, dedicated scam centers where blocks of flats are being used by people to carry out scam attacks, where they're constantly contacting people and fooling them into either giving credentials or paying them money. To identify human being behavior as much as computing behavior. And this bank level vulnerability is typically the inability to detect a scam attack in the first place, Or once they see these scam attacks happening, identifying the root cause rather than just shutting down the accounts as soon as they see them being taken over, playing whack-a-mole with the accounts in effect. Identifying that root cause and stopping it at the source is a real challenge for the banks. And unfortunately, we saw back this time last year, actually, a few banks in the ASEAN region get hit and hundreds of accounts were taken over, millions of dollars were stolen, and moved through into money laundering accounts and even into cryptocurrency, which, as we know, is quite an interesting new area prone to money laundering right now. So, really, that's the best way I could say of describing the situation right now.
You know, these so-called scam centers, right? Do they work on increasing the concept of increasing the denominator? Because, you know, if you have a denominator of 100 people and one or two gets scammed, using the same ratio, extrapolating that to maybe 100,000 denominator, then you're going to get maybe 1,000 or 2,000 people scammed. Is that how it works for these scam centers?
Sometimes, yes. In those scam centers that you're talking about, it could either be a random effort that they're going out and just targeting people and see who they get lucky with. Sometimes it's a little bit more targeted. They will gather information. Sometimes, in fact, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, there was a malware breach of data stolen from a computer in Singapore containing health records. Now, a lot of people might think that those health records were used to take over some kind of medical claims or something, which is not the case. That is cyber to cyber, and that's cybersecurity, where data is stolen. But what is the purpose of that data? It is to enable the thieves, the fraudsters, to target accounts and use the information they've gathered to convince specific people to give over credentials or to pay money. So where they've carried out a good data breach and they can profile people to attack, they then carry out a more intelligent and targeted attack. And that they are the most successful, of course, because they're very quick at convincing people they know them and that they are the genuine source, you could say, that could help them. And then the people are more willing to give over credentials and funds in some way. There's another wave that we're seeing right now, and it's bizarre. You might have heard of the news in the UK a few weeks ago, where the police shut down one of the biggest fraud networks they'd ever done. And this was because of a particular site, iSpoof CC it was, that offered spoofing of telephone numbers. Fraudsters could spoof their telephone number to appear to be from Malaysia, for example, from the Malaysia police, to then carry out the Macau scam and say that, you know, we're calling on behalf of the police, you have this fine, make this payment to this account right now, we'll send you an SMS with an embedded URL for you to make a payment right now to solve the problem. What we're seeing also is this two-tier approach of fraud as a service in the true term. You know, there are organizations, this is where organized crime groups are creating fraud and scam infrastructures and then offering those infrastructures to less skilled scammers. And that's where you get the more random scams, the scam centers that are just calling up anyone and trying their luck. But they're using an infrastructure provided by an organized crime group to do it. So it has become so prolific that we're seeing a service industry developing around the scam world right now, in those scam centers that you mentioned.
Okay. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with SaaS. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us and thanks for continuing on this conversation. I have with me on the line Gerald McDonald, the SaaS Regional Solution Director of Fraud and Security. So Gerard, let's talk a little bit more in terms of the solutions that is made available right now. How do you solve for this fraud and security issue? Do you feel that, say, for instance, artificial intelligence is the answer, automation is the answer? Where do we lie in terms of this conversation?
From a technology perspective, definitely. Of course, we need to improve awareness, and I'll mention that in a minute. But when it comes to responsibilities for curbing fraud, I believe it must be a collective effort from the likes of retail banks, the government, and the consumers particularly. And definitely security vendors play a role in helping those organizations detect and prevent fraud. We've seen, to improve the awareness side of it, we've seen banks rally together in Malaysia, banking associations, to launch the National Scam Awareness Campaign supported by Bank Negara during Financial Literacy Month in 2022. And that was really important to help educate that vulnerable customer base that we mentioned earlier on. We're also seeing the banks themselves investing in technology to tighten up their security, shifting away from things like SMS one-time passwords, which are easy to hack, to more secure forms of authentication, such as mobile banking apps, which are more difficult to take over, and hardware tokens. So we're seeing an improvement in awareness and an improvement in technology. But where does AI play a role in this? I believe that AI is essential, actually, because the banks are investing a fortune to just keep up with this massive surge that we're seeing in business right now. And for the last few years, just keeping up with the surge in demand has been a challenge. But with this recent wave of attacks and the results that we saw last December particularly, they've shifted to and then have been driven by the regulators to invest also in protecting the consumers more. So we are finally seeing them looking for more innovative ways to protect the consumers from this more agile and changing fraud that we're going on. And in technical terms, that means they traditionally used rules-based systems. That's systems where you write in a rule of logic of behavior, predefined logic, to detect fraud. And that's worked when the fraud patterns are particularly constant. But with new and changing fraud patterns, that's where AI and machine learning plays a vital role, because it learns both the normal behavior for your bankers and therefore identifies the abnormal behavior when they start behaving strangely, like unauthorized push payment, where they suddenly make a massive payment to an entity they've never dealt with before. Or there's a whole series of patterns going on. You know, somebody's taken over the account, they're trying to change passwords, they're trying to change beneficiary addresses and PIN numbers and things, and then adding a new beneficiary and wanting to move all the money from those things. That's a new pattern of known fraud, and machine learning and models, analytical models, can identify that too. So that AI and machine learning gives the banks more agility to identify these new patterns and adapt to them on the fly as they go along, and that really helps. It makes a big difference. You know, I guess you've experienced it, Ibrahim. I have. In fact, I experienced it last night, where I went to make a payment online, quite a significant payment, and it was rejected. The system came up and said, sorry, this transaction has been declined. And then seconds later, from the bank, I got a text message saying, we've noticed a suspicious transaction. Was this you or wasn't it? Reply one if it is, and two if it isn't. I immediately replied one, because I wanted to, and I was a bit frustrated with it. And then it replied and said, okay, thanks. If you try this again, it will be approved. And now that's a genuine transaction that occurred, and you know, technology stopped the transaction, which left me feeling frustrated. That's called a false positive. And when you use a rules-based system, particularly, the false positive ratio gets really high when new patterns of fraud come along. With AI and machine learning and it adapting, those false positives reduce. Not only do they reduce, because it's detected these new patterns of fraud, the true positives increase. So actually, those magical times, I don't know if you've ever experienced it, where the bank tells you, we've suspended this transaction, and you've said, well, this was nothing to do with me, and you're greatly relieved that they've shut down that transaction. That's a very good true positive. Actually, you may have experienced that, and you may not, because the banks sometimes, if they're definite that it's fraud, they don't even tell you. So you don't even know in those cases. So in either case, using AI and machine learning would improve the customer experience dramatically. And SaaS, we normally design these systems to detect and react to fraud within about 30 milliseconds. So it's so fast. And it will issue a block instruction. And the banks can then decide, should we shut down the transaction outright or suspend it and ask for some kind of confirmation. In my case, they shut down the transaction and sought confirmation, and then allowed me to carry out a second transaction as well. So this is what's happening out there right now. The better it gets, the better the customer experience. And this is where AI machine learning is really important, in my view anyway.
Having said that, we know that the restrictions of resources is very clear cut. I'm not talking about just human resources. I'm talking about money as well. I'm talking about time. Yeah, resources are finite. And do you feel that there are some ideas into how organizations should reallocate the resources in terms of managing cybersecurity?
So you're right. And in fact, the challenges that I see out in the world, these obstacles to adopting AI and machine learning, I put into three categories. The first one is perception, which you kind of alluded to there. You know, many organizations feel that this kind of technology is a rocket science that can't be understood. The outputs can't be controlled. So even if they did start shutting down transactions and reacting to it, are they really doing the right thing? They don't know. And so there's a whole best practice technique called, you know, explainable AI and manageable AI that helps you govern and control AI and machine learning the way you want it to. And you make sure the results are what you wanted afterwards. So best practices there. And again, SAS can help with this. We have all the expertise that can help organizations do this and educate the organization so that they can start doing it themselves. But in the short term, that we can even fill the gaps so that they can see the results in an explainable and manageable form. The second one that I see is, that again, I felt you kind of led towards, was the perception that it's expensive. And it's true that the skills and the technology isn't cheap, but this is where that you need to shift the perception and look around to the results. What are the results? And do you put a value on company trust and reputation in this way, and customer experience? If you do, then it won't take long to realize that the results are worth way more than the investment, that the return on investment is a rounding error compared to the real business value that this brings. So the trick is to look at it from a business value perspective rather than a cost. Your bottom-up process would be to look at the cost upwards. But to look at it from a business value perspective is from the top down, and that's the direction they really need to look. And one of the tricks in that also is to when they embark on any of these ventures, start measuring the results in business terms. What did this deliver to us from a business perspective? And if they're looking at case studies from other banks, for example, look at what those other banks saw from a business return perspective rather than a cost perspective. And that's where it will become easy to appreciate the value. The third one is resource availability. And that's another true one. Of course, data analytics skills are hot in demand. And organizations, I'm afraid, need to rise to that challenge. But also vendors have to rise to that challenge too. And in the case of SAS, we've invested a lot in skills and experience that can help. And that certainly helps in the short term. We can help with the banks get going and invest and see these business returns, for example. And also to tool themselves up so that they become more and more self-sufficient as time goes by, and that they can see this for themselves and justify it themselves long-term, ultimately.
Any final word before we conclude our conversation this evening?
Oh, yeah, okay, for me. So a couple of examples. I'd like to say there is a major organization in Singapore that invested in this type of technology, and they saw millions of dollars recovered in fraudulent transactions in the first phase of the project. They saw a 10 to 25% improved fraud detection rate. Now, that means that they found more true fraud and developed less false positives, you could say, which, of course, helps their resourcing levels become more accurate, but also improves their customer experience to the extent, actually, that they received over 27 awards from the Singapore police in recognition of their fraud prevention efforts. And that's a great accolade for customers, particularly. And this was all whilst they saw a 160% increase in digital accounts being opened just within a one-year period. So that's one example. Another one I could think of is in Thailand, where they saw a 40% reduction in case volume whilst increasing their case handling, a 35% improvement in their fraud detection rates, and an 18% reduction in those false positives. Now, all of those are just numbers, really, at the end of the day. Their key quote was, with fewer false positives and the prediction scoring level that we provided, that SAS provided, they also provided a better customer experience whilst detecting more fraud. And that's the ultimate goal, I think, that any organization needs to go for with any of these kind of ventures.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Gerard McDonald, the SAS Regional Solution Director, Fraud and Security. We do cover the issue of fraud and security a lot of times here on Astro Awani. So do check out on all our resources on that. And of course, I still continue to nurse my throat following the extraordinary win of Argentina a few days ago. But for now, we'll go for one short break. Do continue on with us on Astro Awani. My name is Ibrahim Sani. This is Notepad.